Hello and welcome to Astrology Studio for Taurus for 2022 and into 2023. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next little while. And I'm here to sketch out some of the major movements of the next year or so, which include sublime things like a conjunction going on in your house of spiritual matters, which says pay attention to your ancestors, ranging all the way out to some very dramatic things that will affect the whole world, like the entry of Pluto into Aquarius, which is one of the signs on the fixed cross, so it is it's very influential in your life, as are all of the fixed signs. But before I get underway with the astrology, I just want to comment on how challenging it is right now to even have a sense of the future, or to be hopeful, or to be optimistic. And there are people who are keenly aware of this shift that's happened. And there are others who have just been pushed into a deeper level of challenge and despair, but not really understanding why. And then there are some few people who are facing the times that we're living as a kind of a frontier, who see possibility in times of change, or who see the chance to, let's say, do their part to extend the human experience into what may be a time when being human is more difficult and is more unusual. Because I think that the challenges that we face, given this absolutely unprecedented rise in technology, are real challenges, and they have been brewing for a long time. And one of the responses to this sense that something is very different, potentially very wrong, could be to have the best time you can, to celebrate and do whatever you want and have the most fun. And that is one of the possible approaches. It all depends on, you know, where you personally are coming from in terms of how you see yourself as being part of the wider human experience rather than your own personal human experience. There really is no set way to think about all that has happened and all that is developing, because we've never been here before. And if we've been any place similar, it's been on a much smaller scale, and I think with less at stake, and in many ways, the situation that, you know, evolved all the way through the 20th century was more comprehensible than what we're witnessing now. Though I think that to some extent, every day, everyone wakes up and has to adapt in some way to the changes that have come over the world in just a little bit more than 2 years. There are some who are still really fighting with denial and feigning not understanding certain things when they really do. And because the dominant astrology, not just of this solar year for you, but of the entire global experience, the entire human race, and all of the critters who are influenced by human activity, is so personally influencing your chart, by which I mean Pluto and Aquarius, your 10th house. This probe you have into the world where you meet the world at large, the larger, wider world, not just the immediate environment around you. There's a few different ways to enter the world through astrology. And one way is the way to walk down the street. That might be the third house or the seventh house. But then when you have to enter the world where you transact your goals, you work on the level of how you are perceived, your reputation, and the impact of your choices on the wider community and the impact of the wider community's choices on you, that's a whole different thing. And I would describe that as being a factor of the 10th house of Aquarius. And the important thing about this house for you is that it is where you work out the whole idea of leadership and of responding to leadership. So it is this transpersonal theme. It is this thing that takes you outside of yourself into these deep exchanges that really, I think, many people entirely avoid or don't know are going on because they don't think of themselves as being any part of that aspect of life. Though since early 2020, you've had Saturn working its way across this very top house in your chart, the 10th house, Aquarius. And since late 2020, beginning in late 2020, Jupiter and Saturn were there. Saturn still remains. Jupiter's about to move on. I will cover that. Saturn is giving you some preparation for this leadership calling that you are experiencing. It may be presenting you with genuine adventures and challenges and occasions to rise to. And I suggested in the remaining few months, that is to say that Saturn leaves Aquarius in March of 23, that you really take advantage of this and you learn your way around the world, meaning the world of all of this human interaction that results in society itself. That's the 10th house in my view. Because your calling to involvement is very likely to go up radically with the arrival of Pluto in the 10th. And you may be experiencing callings and ideas about your life that you never imagined that you would. There has been no comparable transit to Pluto going across Aquarius. It hasn't happened since shortly after the American Revolution. And at that time, nobody knew that it was happening because Pluto was not even discovered. So it might be fair to say that you are being summoned to much greater things, to much greater callings, and to deeper responsibilities. That would be a good way to take this astrology, because the other way to take it is to be made subject to changes over which you have exceedingly little influence and a limited number of choices. So throughout this reading and truly throughout all of the recent Taurus readings, I have been describing this and hinting at this and saying, okay, it's time to really hear this. But now we're in the year where this is going to happen. By your next birthday, Pluto will be in Aquarius. Now, one thing I've noticed in my long study of personalities and, let's say, powerful people, both through doing news charts and working with people of influence, is that there's often a great disparity between the outer life and the inner life. And one of the things that weakens people is to not have their inner emotional life in order, resolved, even mapped out, or to be something they're familiar with, but rather, very often, when there are strong professional callings or any form of a public calling, which you're in the process of moving into this phase, these things can be an excuse not to address one's inner life and to not really, seek being at peace with oneself. It's kind of like, why bother when you can work it all out on the world, and who's going to notice anyway? But to really be in integrity, by which I mean strong, I don't mean it as this illusion, you know, you look right and you have the right bag flung over your shoulder and you say integrity a lot. I'm not talking about that. I mean an integrated state of being where there are not big chunks of you that you haven't absorbed into yourself, for example, right? This is the lack of integration problem. We see it a lot in gender relations. I believe, is essential to do that interior work, to be one consistent, true person throughout your being, and to find the pockets of your interior reality that are unexplored and unresolved. And fortunately, you have a lot of help in doing this. In studying the chart for the sun's ingress into Taurus, which was a little bit earlier this week, the thing that really stepped out of the chart for me and said, pay attention, was that when the sun entered your sign, which is one of the most important charts doing solar return type of work, was that the ruling planet of Taurus, which is Venus, was in Pisces in an exact, like one arc minute, an astronomically exact conjunction to a centaur called Nessus. And this is a very interesting pairing to put the planet of receptivity and beauty and emotional intelligence and abundance into a conjunction with this centaur planet, similar to Chiron, a bit darker, that is about consequences and the betrayal of trust. That, I think, in my long contemplation of the mythology of Nessus and working with Nessus, and I've written quite a bit about it. I know it's scattered around the websites, but is that the issue of trust is so central to the theme of Nessus. And there really is only one trust, which is this simultaneous interweaving of the ability to trust yourself and to trust others, because your trust of others is always going to be dependent upon your ability to rely on your own assessments, to rely on your own ability to sense people. And so if your trust in yourself is compromised, it makes it very difficult to make choices about others, and it makes it difficult to foresee the consequences of those choices and of your interaction with other people. And that, I think, is what Nessus is all about. And so to combine the influence of Nessus and Venus is to remind you that you must be a very discerning person as you proceed forward. But much more than that, I think, it is necessary to look at the entire matter of trust as it influences your life, starting with your early caregivers and the things that they did and the things that they said, and extending to siblings and cousins and friends you knew as a child, and how you mapped out the world and therefore how you mapped out existence in the terms of whether it is a thing you can trust, a place you can relax a little bit and have any confidence that your perceptions are true. And there's a history here for you, as there is for everyone. Though you're being called to really be the bottom line, or as Melanie Reinhardt says with Nessus, the place where the buck stops, the place, the person who deals the cards in the game, who takes over the table and deals the cards. And this is the table of your life. And so the calling, I think, above all, amplified, enhanced by the presence of Saturn in your 10th house and the arrival of Pluto, is to take over command of your existence, to see the ways you have not to be too amazed by the ways you have neglected to take over your existence, but rather just to appreciate the fact that you are doing so. I think, obviously, there are regrets and remorse that people feel for the choices that they've made in the past. I hear about this when people submit their Chiron transits, and they're just astonished at the decisions they've made and the choices they've made and the person who they were in the past ahead of all that growth. But I do suggest you not let that stop you from making an honest assessment and from testing your capacity to actually trust. And to actually trust calls for a measure of vulnerability. And for some reason, one of the things I've noticed perhaps the most consistently in terms of spiritual matters of those born under Taurus, who I've known for many years, sometimes 20 or 30 or longer years, is that capacity to trust can be diminished and there can be a kind of inherent suspicion. And this is the compromised territory, right? Suspicion does not make the world a safer place. The ability to evaluate people's motives certainly helps make the world a safer place. But so too in that is the ability to really understand your own motives, to be transparent with yourself, and to learn how to be genuinely open and honest with others about what it is that is moving you to take the actions that you're taking and to make the choices that you're making, and about the role that others who are important to you actually have in your life. And I can say with confidence, this is not the kind of thing that happens overnight. There can be moments of revelation where you just realize, I've got to get this sorted out and figure out why I respond to people the way that I do, or figure out why it is that I keep making the same kind of decision over and over again and still keep getting the same result. Well, reflection can do that, particularly if you're honest about the past. And I'm not suggesting that you be obsessive about the past. Rather, I'm suggesting that you be real about the past and about what happened, and not brush things off so easily on the one hand, but also notice where your thought pattern and your emotional thought pattern might be in a kind of a loop, and go there and see what see what that's about. Take that apart. Look at the relationships that you had in a careful and thoughtful way, and gain the advantage of learning everything that you possibly can learn from the past, so that you can let the events go and keep the wisdom, because you're going to need that wisdom as the power is turned up in many different ways in your life, internally, externally, involving your role and your calling. Pluto is going to turn up the juice big time. It's unlikely to happen all at once, though I will say that the last time Pluto changed signs, which is when it entered Capricorn for the first dip into Capricorn in early 2008, a lot of things changed very, very fast, almost overnight. And in ways we've now forgotten, the world was remade. So it might benefit you to think of yourself as being about to embark on a voyage of very long length. It's a 20-year transit of Pluto across Aquarius, for which you've been prepared a little bit like the astronauts prepared for the moon by visiting a crater in Germany. And then they can go out for a beer. That's not the same thing as actually going to the surface of another planet. And so you have all that experience of, romping around inside the Reese crater. That's a true story, by the way. But you haven't been to the moon. And you are looking ahead, know it or not, feel it or not, at that type of voyage, in that type of odyssey. How to feel like your life is a science fiction adventure, with a little bit of music from Vision Quest featuring Jelko McMullen. So let's take this to a more personal level. There are two houses in astrology where you really can say, maybe three, where you can say, okay, this is me. Look at these three houses, and you get a really good picture of who a person is inwardly, and what their experience of themselves is, both inwardly and as they experience themselves in the world outwardly. And they're similar, because your ability to witness yourself in the world, in the seemingly outer world, is an experience of inner awareness. And these houses, houses 12, 1, and 2, also talk about the nature of consciousness and the many unusual things that consciousness is capable of. One thing I'll start with is that, and I know I've said this many, many times, and I think it bears repeating every single time or I wouldn't say it, is that one of the things that all of this digital consciousness has done to us, particularly the way that it is used, is to evacuate people of their inner life, their inner awareness, their sense of their own inward existence. I imagine there's a good few people who'd be really confused by the whole concept now, younger people. And many older people have forgotten what it was like to really have an inward life that is a sanctuary and that is inviolable, that is your place within yourself. And this is very important to Taurus. In the structure of the Taurus solar chart, perhaps the greatest device in all of astrology is the solar chart, because it provides the basic map, the basic concept for each of the signs. And as you move the wheel one place, every house changes. And so when we line the wheel up with Taurus, we find out that the sign of self-seeking, of I am, of conscious existence, is tucked into the 12th house of your chart. So you have Aries, Taurus, and Taurus rising, have Aries in or on or as the 12th house. And the interesting thing about the 12th house is that it has a tendency to disappear. It is like when you look at a stage, sitting in a theater, and you look at a stage, and you're focused on what's going on the stage. But then there's all this activity on all sides of the stage and to the sides and behind and above and below, looking straight at this thing, you can't see any of it. Maybe every now and then someone slips or you see a stagehand move by dressed in black and moving the scenery around or something like that. But even they tend to disappear into the woodwork, basically. And that is a little bit of the nature of how it is like to have Aries in the 12th house. That this thing that you could experience as I am tends to be tucked behind a scrim. It's just out of sight and out of mind. But it's still there. It still exists. All the activity is vitally important to make the next thing happen. It happens that you have a lot of help making your way back in to this region where we have been either taken out over and over again or flushed out, because the entire psychic, spiritual, inner life, dream life of consciousness, as it has been evolving over the millennia and over recent centuries, has been supplanted by this digital dream. And it can be a very nice dream. It can be a very convenient dream. It is bringing my voice to you right at this moment. But I'm fully aware that I'm speaking to you. I'm fully aware that I am saying things that are going to influence you. I am holding a physical astrology chart in my hand and a pencil in my hand as I speak to you. So I know that I'm working with this, dream conductor of digital. But most of what's going on is that the digital spell helps people evade any sense of their own being and replaces the sense of their own dreaming with this kind of numeric binary zeros and ones powered by electricity type of dream. And here is the very place of waking up. For all of us, but especially for you, with Aries there, with quite remarkable things happening in Aries that could be your true vehicle fully back into yourself and to take possession of your existence of your reality, and through that, to the greatest extent that it is possible, your own destiny. So one of those things has been Chiron making its way through Aries since early 2018. It dipped back into Pisces in 2018, resettled in Aries in early 2019, around the time of your birthday. So we've got now 3 full years, 19 to 20, 20 to 21, 21 to 22, and one partial year, that's to say 18 to 19, so about 3.5 years, but 3 solid years of Chiron being in Aries and in your 12th house. This has been the constant reminder to orient on your actual inner reality, to stay in tune with yourself, and to bring your choices and your actions into alignment with this inner self as you remap it out. In some ways, it's changed since you were young, when you have most awareness of it. In some ways, the most important ways, it has not changed. There are things that are very consistent for people throughout the course of their life. And I would suggest that you tap into those things that are at the very core of who you say and believe that you are. And I would propose that one of those things is everything associated with your ability and willingness to trust, to be vulnerable, and to be known by others for who you really are. So one of the things Chiron is doing is lighting up this interior area. And it is, Chiron's influence is so powerful that it might seem like you're living in a parallel reality where you are being kind of, where there's like Mexican jumping bean. Does anyone know what those are? Something inside of you that is squirming around, that is moving, that is rattling, that is exploring, that is probing, that is illuminating the dark spaces inside of you to help you reach inside and map out the facets of your consciousness that make it possible for you to be an integrated person, someone who has absorbed all that stuff in the 12th, wants to be absorbed. And so whatever that is, it's a lot of old material, ancestral material, forgotten things, forgotten people, forgotten goals, looming and lurking in the 12th house, and Chiron is mapping that out. Now, one of the most glorious things about your solar chart this year is that Jupiter is about to enter Aries. I mean, that sure came up fast. I mean, it was just, seems like 20 minutes ago when Jupiter was in Capricorn and then formed a conjunction to Saturn in the first degree of Aquarius, right on your 10th house cusp. Remember that? That was at the winter solstice, northern hemisphere winter solstice of 2020. After that absolutely crazy, insane year that we all went through, there was this kind of new thing that declared itself. The 20-year conjunction, by the way, in Aquarius, fairly rare, something that was really your first calling of something entirely new, and yet we were all so rattled and shaken up at that time that it was not necessarily something you experienced as a calling to something new, but I know some of you did. Then Jupiter made its way through Pisces, where it remains now for just a few more weeks before it enters Aries. And so what Jupiter entering Aries is going to do is take all of that learning. Let's go back to the winter solstice of 2020, around December 21st, 2020, and deliver it to you as an inner reality, as something that you take on board. The 12th is really one of the most important places where we take things on board. It's so much so that we have all this stuff on board in the 12th house that we're not even aware of, and that's the work of Chiron, is to awaken you and alert you to what you have there that you don't know about. But Jupiter brings substance. It brings a gift. And there's something very unusual in this transit of Jupiter into Aries, which is it's going to make, when it does, a conjunction to a planet a bit beyond the orbit of Pluto called Manwe. Now, for those who are deep scholars of J.R.R. Tolkien, Manwë is the chief of the gods in the Tolkien legendarium, a daunting figure. There is an audiobook that I would share with you if you write to me, get my attention, just put audiobook in the subject header. You meet Manwë quite early on in this book, and he's the supreme god of the whole world of J.R.R. Tolkien, never really mentioned that I know of in The Lord of the Rings. But what does it mean when you take the chief of the gods and of this fantasy series and combine it with the chief of the gods of Roman mythology, right in the first degree of Aries, right in your 12th house? This is, as far as I can see, it is the inner awakening to your god consciousness, to your ability to be the, let's say, the supreme ruler of your existence and the choices that you make, as well as to be in contact with this, source of knowledge, power, wisdom, and awareness that is right within you. Like, this is the ultimate key to living spiritually, is to be actually in contact with God within you. It's not an outer thing. It's not a place you go. It's not the Delphic Oracle. It's what you learn about the nature of your own consciousness and where you determine that your source is. Now, Chiron has been in this place for years now, working its way around, moving some of the, let's say, untrue things out of the way, helping you sort out your necessities and your and the mere fact that you have this inner life. Chiron has been the pioneer in here for you. If you're around 50, by the way, this radically increases in importance. Now, the 12th contains basically all the stuff we don't normally think about. So as that comes to the surface, I would strongly encourage you to do that. Now, meanwhile, in this other part of your consciousness, the nature of which we don't really understand that well, I have mentioned that there are, I think I said that there are 19 minor planets in Taurus. Let me count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, counting the node, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. They are. So the sun is now making its way across Taurus. And during that season, and this chart is cast for the new moon. So one or two of them, Pallas Athene has not arrived yet. But we will have at the time of the new moon, Pallas, Memoria, Sisyphus, Hebe, the sun, the moon, Eros, Hybris or Hubris, Albion or QB1, Toro, Uranus, Achilles, Asclepius, Lempo, Pelion, the True Node, the Mean Node, Alicanto, Hecate, Mors Sumnus, Sappho, and Sedna. That's a lot. These are all, in my repertory, commonly known and used ones. This is not even going to like, oh, let's find 5,000. And so what this is suggesting is that your experience of yourself may be rather kaleidoscopic, and you have a lot of options for how to present yourself, how to offer who you are, and also many opportunities to learn new things about yourself. Though there's something, there's really two unbelievably beautiful alignments that are happening. And again, this is referring to the new moon chart. And this is in your sign. It is the alignment of Sun, Moon, Eros, Hybris, and Albion, all within 1.5 degrees. So it goes from 10.5 out to the end of the 12th degree. And you've got this. This is like the epicenter of your solar return. So with the moon and the sun, we know that those are about the inner masculine and feminine principles and the different ways that you express a human personality, the expressive and the receptive, basically. But it is the Eros Hybris Albion conjunction that is so interesting. Now, Albion, which I've referred to for many years as QB1, the more that I use it, the more I see that it pertains to something so elemental in this thing that we describe as humanity when we mean it at its best. Now, as QB1, which I still really think of it as, there is the role of a healer in QB1. It is like a super Vesta. It is the ability to be at the edge of your own awareness, the edge of your own, let's say, the frontier of your consciousness and the frontier of this wave of space and time that we're riding along, and the ability to assist others in riding that wave of consciousness along this potentially frightening series of edges that we keep encountering as we move through life. So Albion is saying, stay near the edge. Stay with others who are willing to stay near the edge rather than retreating, rather than stepping back. Live with the fact that you live next to an abyss. Now, Eros is about love and sex and cardiac matters. It is essentially the heart as it relates to matters of sexuality, which is always intermingled with matters of trust and the place where the spiritual and the physical intersect. But then there's this thing that doesn't seem to belong there in the mix, which is Hybris. And Hybris was a kind of a demon in Greek mythology, all things not Taurian, right? This Taurus really wants things to be proper, but Hybris is about insolence, just rude and disruptive behavior. It is about all forms of outrageous acting out and all of this stuff. And it's the root of the word hubris. And so the question here is, what is this internal influence that could have you act exactly opposite any tendency that you have so carefully cultivated, in the image of that tendency that you've carefully cultivated, and how you identify as being, there is this, in a sense, there is this demon or daimon, depending on how you take it, that that needs to be made friends with, that needs to be accepted, that needs to be listened to. It could be a raging child. That is the most, I think, psychologically and spiritually, that is the most likely candidate for what this is. An internal manifestation of your inner kid who is very angry about something. And so the normal, natural tendency is going to be to, like, get rid of this thing, push it away, push it out. But that's how it got to have so much influence in the first place. And not just in you and in me, like, and really in everyone. The pushing away of the attempt to banish these things is what gives them their power of making chaos. The 12th house in Vedic astrology is the house of the pleasures of the bed. We've all experienced this transcendent feeling of sexual experiences, feeling like they were a dream the next day, right? Did that really happen? That's a very typical 12th house experience. But the inner life is more than just a dream, and the pleasures of the bed are more than that. The pleasures of the bed are one of the most important ways that we map out the nature of consciousness, and also whether we're willing to allow ourselves to have the kind of feelings that we need and that we want, and that as a Taurus are very important to you, but are so often disrupted either by various forms of raging inner child not being not, let's say, allowing you to facilitate the vulnerability that you need to trust people enough to have these experiences and to trust yourself enough to have them when you're alone. And the second major one is guilt. Now, the profound meaning and significance of the concept of guilt is way understated and misunderstood, both as a thing that binds society together in all the ways that we just can't stand it, that lead to bald hypocrisy, and for you, the extent to which it is the necessary fuel for your spiritual journey, because there's something about your spiritual journey inherently, not personally, but inherently, as a fact of having Capricorn on the ninth house, which is that spirituality is usually pounded into us as a set of hypocritical moral dogmas and the hang-ups of our parents and the guilt trip of our parents and most significantly the guilt trip that the institutions of society lay on almost everyone to make them conform, abandon themselves, and sacrifice themselves to some non-existent larger greater good that is not good when you've got a lot of people who are very suppressed, oppressed, depressed, and repressed. And a big part of your journey since Pluto entered Capricorn in 2008 has been to dismantle, unwind, and deconstruct all of that emotional baggage. And you have made tremendous progress in doing this. But it's never a good idea to, you know, gloat about how much progress you've made, because that's when it catches you. And so what I'm suggesting here is that you stay with this process of being aware of the role and the impact of influence of guilt on you and on all the people around you, and really deal with it. Really understand the way in which this is the, as I forget the name of the author who wrote a book called Healing the Shame That Binds You. In many ways, it is the root of all things, the trouble, the human race, and the primary way that those who seek power over us get it. Fear of mortality and guilt, which are very closely related. And this is a crucial essence of your spiritual path, even into this very moment. So, before I move on to other adventures, I do want to tie together the influence of the 12th Aries, where Jupiter is going to meet Manwe and Chiron is shining a light around the secret attic of your consciousness, and Capricorn, the 9th house, which is another house that does have this psychological and spiritual feeling to it. And that is that in your case, they both pertain to ancestral matters. Now, there are some people who are hip to this, and there are some people who aren't, and there are just people who like to hang out with their family and love their old relatives and remember the departed ones. And that's one way of experiencing the ancestors. But I don't have a lot of resources for this, and maybe you know some, maybe you're onto this, and maybe we can share them with the group of people who are listening to this reading. But one of the most central features of your spiritual life involves your relationship to the ancestors. That is true because of Capricorn, and it's true because you have your house of your sign associated with self, the Aries, in a house associated with the ancestors. And the worldly manifestation I've known about this is that all Taurians, and one of the reasons why I love you guys so much, is you're into old stuff. It's not just old stuff. It's like there's history in a dinner plate or in a sterling silver spoon or in the etiquette that helps the human race conduct its affairs in a somewhat slightly more orderly fashion than we might otherwise do so. You've got big, big, big messaging coming from the ancestors right now. It might open up the moment you tune into your inner voice. This is, yes, all this stuff is going on in Aries, and Jupiter is about to come in there, and so too is Venus. But there is this very unusual alignment going on in Capricorn right now of Pholus and Quaoar that's dancing around for decades. I think it's going to be the two are moving at about the same speed, so they keep overtaking each other. And Pholus is about accessing the grandparents and great grandparents. It's three generations beyond yourself. Quaoar, in a conjunction to it, is going all the way back to the dawn of the tribe, the dawn of the race, as you define it. Now, there are two planets in a conjunction here with them that, in many ways, to my ear, as you know, a spiritual guy who also studies the nature of digital technology and the hidden documents in the files of corporations, two other crucial things that define the nature of this spiritual quest. And one is Ixion. Ixion, right in the conjunction here, is talking about the amoral nature of our times. where it's not that someone does something they know is wrong. It's that the whole way consciousness is being tuned now is that there is no such thing as right or wrong, or they're completely flipped and people are manipulated into doing positively horrid things to each other and then being told how wonderful they are for doing so. I would highly caution you to be aware that this is being used and abused and exploited through a vulnerability that most people are not going to be aware that they have. And the connection to the ancestors can happen many ways. It can be tapping into ancestral fears, the lack of trust that's been passed down, the lack of trust that men and women have had instilled into one another brutally, violently, the lack of trust that women put into other women, that men put into other men. There's no one culprit here. And I would caution being aware of any equation that says they're the people, that group is the people who are wrong. All right. The next is Atlantis. Atlantis is the abuse of technology, the actual doom that technology can impart to us. I haven't checked it in the chart for the Trinity test and the splitting of the atom, but I'd like to check where that is, right? That's going to tell an interesting story in there. But it is the doomsday scenarios, and then also all of the lost continent, lost civilization scenarios are all packaged up into Atlantis. But there is something else, which is the what should be the deep mistrust in technological advancement for its own sake. And I think this is the number one spiritual issue of our times. Other times it was defined as self-actualization or, going on the road and being free or finding inner peace by becoming Buddhist or living in the Rajneesh temple and being sexually wild. All these have been various different times themes of our spiritual journey within proximate to our lifetimes. But now there's something that very few people are even capable of seeing as a spiritual issue, and that is, what is all this transformation? What is happening to us? What is happening to us? What is happening to you? And Taurians tend to be the people who don't want to have all the wires out and don't like all the stuff and the new gadget after new gadget after new gadget. A little bit Luddite. Prefer to have, antique wood furniture. But we're all in this soup. And I wonder what it is that is coming down through this Pholus-Quaoar conjunction. Is it cautionary? Is it the interior wisdom of the ages that is guiding you how to, how to navigate through this environment? But I would suggest that if you line these up, like these concepts, I know this is getting a little abstract for astrology. I'm definitely not, saying but tall, dark, handsome man. But we will get to that. But if you take the nearby generations in Pholus, which also, by the way, includes the delivery of a lot of alcoholism down the generations. Quaoar is a much cleaner influence, I think. It's much less conflicted. It's about our concept of the nature of our tribe, the nature of the human race, however you want to look at it. But then there's this troubling tendency of suspending right and wrong in Ixion, and then this other troubling tendency of just completely imbibing any new technology that comes along, that I think is where the human race right now is being led over a cliff. All right, keeping that in mind, let's see what we've got here. We've got a few other houses where there's some exciting stuff. I've covered the two big conjunctions that are, I think, some of the most standout. It's the Sun, Moon, Hybris, Albion. We talked about Pholus Quaoar and their conjunction to amorality and technological obsession and doomsday scenarios, which should always be taken cautiously. There are going to be a lot of doomsday scenarios going around as Pluto makes its ingress into Aquarius. It is going to be the theme of the internet starting in 2023. It's already a pretty good theme. There's already a million prepping podcasts, but wait till we get Pluto in Aquarius. You know, we're going to long for hand drums and boiling water over fire to make a cup of tea, anything to get out of the digital realm. Now, in Taurus, there's one last really, really remarkable thing, I think. And that is the conjunction of Sappho and Sedna. Now, Sedna is the one with, I think it's got a 10,400-year orbit. It's an object out in the scattered disk. And for most of our lifetimes, it's been moving through Taurus. It's almost as if it is a defining feature of Taurus. A fascinating myth. It is the Inuit creation myth. It is the story of a girl. It's worth reading. There's probably many versions of it. But Melanie Reinhardt, I believe, has an essay called The Goddess of the Icy Waters. Let's see if I can find that for you. I once sat through a 4-hour drama at a UAC conference where they acted out the myth of Sedna. It went on and on and on and on and on. But the bottom line of Sedna is, as Melanie Reinhardt says, someone whose delineations I trust deeply, keeping your heart open in hell. This is being conjoined by Sappho. Now, Sappho is the two Venus symbol, so it has that, you know, hot girl-on-girl action borrowing from Howard Stern. That's actually not the primary, female-female sex is not the primary delineation of Sappho. Sappho taught and loved women. Sappho is the first woman we hear from in the West. The poetry fragments of Sappho are, as far as I know, the first we ever hear from a Western woman. There are some women in China who get a voice. The Tale of Kiyu, I don't know when that was written. She has a voice. But in terms of Greek, Sappho is the one. So she is a remnant of the ancient consciousness of women. Now, in astrological delineation, the thing about Sappho that is so crucial is the ability of people to be together and to trust, to genuinely be in emotional simpatico with one another. When you combine this with Sedna, keeping your heart open in hell, and Sedna's story has so much about it, so much mistrust about it. She does not trust men. Her father betrays her, and when she refuses to marry anyone, she wants to be independent, but the family can't afford to have her, so they essentially sell her into marriage, and then she's married to a demon and all this stuff. Bottom line is, I think Sedna is another one of these influences that is talking about trust. Is in your sign. It is taking a trine from Pluto. Pluto, tucked into those last 2 degrees before Aquarius, is saying, plainly, what did your mother do to damage your trust in yourself, in humanity, in men, and in other women? This may be the most useful astrology that you've got in the coming solar year. One good thing about it is that Pluto is going to go back and forth over that line between Capricorn and Aquarius several times. So you get time to work this out. But the sooner that you define the issue, which I just defined as, what did your mother do to damage your trust? And further, what are her unresolved psychological hang-ups? That is what you get a chance to resolve. Imagine if you could just see for a moment the way that all of your mother's unresolved psychological hang-ups were basically delivered to you as a trousseau in a nice tidy trunk for when you were ready for them or not. And then, like, you've got your own personal Pandora's box of mom's issues. What if you could work those out? Well, you now get a chance. You get a chance through Sedna, working its way through late Taurus, trine Pluto, working its way through late Capricorn, and then all of this openness to essentially the very material of depth psychology, the very thing that makes depth psychology worth knowing, worth doing. Crucial messages like don't suppress negative feelings because they just turn to chaos, for example. Okay, so a few other houses here. Let's talk briefly about money. There's going to be a lot of talk about money. There already is. What has come across my desk is that Europe is going to eliminate cash in 18 months. Huh, I can't believe I just said that. There are other similar cautionary notes being rung. The amount of debt that particularly American society is in, but Europe was never recapitalized after the meltdown in 2008. The banks were not recapitalized. There was a massive meltdown in 2019 that was completely covered up by the pandemic, claim pandemic, that I've detailed. There's going to be a lot of financial change. Your most important necessity right now is to diversify, to hedge your bets, and to be highly aware of the nature of warnings. Now, in the nature of warnings, that is not to say you heed every warning by being highly aware of the nature of warnings. I'm saying, like, pay attention to what they're saying and evaluate them carefully. This is going to require knowledge of the economic transition that we are in. It's going to require knowledge of the Great Reset. The Great Reset is going to take effect the most powerfully as Pluto enters Aquarius. This is personal for you. This is your house of leadership. It is your house of your aspirations, and your house of how you relate to those entities and people who are in power beyond you. So the message in the chart is Mercury conjunct Phaethon in the first degree of your money house. Listen to the cautionary tales. Now, the thing about the myth of Phaethon is it is so absurd, and Phaethon's behavior so hubristic, so outrageous, so intent on not hearing, that if you can get past that, assuming you even have it, and get yourself to a place where you can make a reasoned and rational assessment. There. So keep your ear to the ground. It's crucial to not believe everything that you hear, but rather develop sufficient independent expertise that you can have a real conversation with anyone who knows more than you. All right, next, let me just pull up a computer-drawn chart. Pisces is your friendship house. You have Pisces on the 11th. At the time of this reading, the ingress and even for the new moon. Let's go to the new moon also. So take that out to the future a little bit. There is quite a lot going on here. And here's where we really see the benefits of a life consciously lived and the portent of things, you know, you're being able to guide yourself, assuming you can do some of these things like resolve the unresolved matters of trust. Not be manipulated by your mother's hang-ups, by her unresolved psychological baggage, by not being afraid of your own interior reality, by being committed to making the kinds of choices that benefit you, to addressing matters of trust. If you can do any of that, if you can do a little of that, if you can set yourself in that direction, if you can be friends with your commitment to growth in those specific ways, you can have a fantastic life. There are financial rewards of cultivating this level of trust. There are emotional rewards in terms of mainly in terms of the people that you can surround yourself with. Now is the time to profoundly value your friends. Old friends, find them, look them up, see where they're at. New friends, welcome them, embrace them, respect them, extend some trust, extend some vulnerability, see how they respond. None of this is really possible. None of these benefits are really possible if one is locked away within oneself, if one is obsessed with harboring jealousy, if one is committed to not trusting, committed to believing lies and all this stuff, right? If you can say, okay, I'm done with that, or it never really affected me that much, and you can verify that a few times, then you have this kind of golden ticket. And in the coming year, your friends are going to be very important. They're going to be the source of all good things. And this includes friends becoming lovers or more intimate partners. All the action in the real, let's say, playing field of your life is in the social realm. I would remind you that in the past 2 years, that is where most of the bombs have been dropped. Convincing people they are going to kill each other, convincing people to reject their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, their children, or friends with a differing opinion, we must heal this damage or we will have nothing. We must claim back what has been taken from us. Here's where you are very likely to excel as someone in a role of leadership by example among the people that you care about and the people that you love. All right, that is my message for you upon this solar return. As always, I'm open to corresponding with anyone with thoughts or questions. Good place to email me. Let's see, I'll use an email address, not getting a lot of action these days. efc@bookofblue.com. So I'll see it in there. And if I've mentioned any resources in this reading that I haven't posted, remind me to do that, or remind Victoria or someone like that. I'm going to post The Goddess of the Frozen Waters, Melanie's article about Sedna. And I wish you much love and beauty and all those things that that your life is about. All right, signing off from a perfectly glorious spring day in Kingston, New York. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.